Hey, good morning. Welcome to Your Turn. I'm Mike Causey, and we're going to be talking today about Is There Life After John Barry? As you may know, John Barry, who has been director of the Office of Personnel Management for the past 4 years, his term is expiring very soon. There's been speculation about a number of jobs for him, but he will not be continuing, apparently, at OPM. And for many people, that is a great loss. He's one of the more interesting people. I would certainly say the best-known OPM director and best and known to a lot of us before he even came into the Office of Personnel Management. He worked for Congressman Steny Hoyer of Maryland for many years, and he was the point man for getting bigger pay raises than either Democratic or Republican presidents wanted them to have. So very interesting career, very interesting person. And joining me today in studio is Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association. And they have a unique take on the government and OPM in particular. And Bill Dugan, president of the National Federation of Federal Employees. Now, Bill, are you out in a cave in New Mexico? Is that what they said?
Actually, I'm in White Sands Missile Range.
Okay, I thought it was something exotic like Carlsbad Caverns or something. But
Not quite.
So you're out doing some work. Well, listen, thank you for joining us. Carol is here. And please, either of you, feel free to jump in. But I ask you first, Carol, the mayor of New York City that used to walk down the streets and say, how am I doing? How's Barry doing?
Well, I think Barry has been a terrific advocate for federal employees. I mean, he's certainly been very visible. He's very passionate about it. I think he's very sincere about it. Obviously, he's had a very long history in government. Now, obviously, a number of us have issues with policies the administration positions have taken. And so I guess the question sometimes that lingers in people's minds is, well, how well does John fight for those federal employees when he's over at the White House? I think if you just look at it on its face, he's done as good a job as could be expected under the circumstances.
And things I would guess could possibly be a lot worse had he not been there and to a great extent had the president's ear on some of these things, at least in the first term.
I suspect so. Now, there, if we talk about management of OPM, we can talk about, the retirement backlog and other issues. But I think an important part of the role is indeed the public face.
Yeah. Bill Dugan, what's your take on Mr. Barry's 4 years?
Well, I'd have to agree with Carol in terms of his advocacy for federal employees. I think he's been a very strong advocate. I've also been very impressed with his advocacy and open-door policy for labor. As you know, under the previous administration, the doors at OPM were pretty much closed to labor, and he opened them up immediately when he stepped in as director. I've been very impressed with his championing labor management cooperation and collaboration through co-chairing the National Council on Federal Labor Management Relations. And he's been a champion for federal employees on a number of other issues, such as extending health care and other federal benefits to lesbian, gay employees and their families, as well as domestic partners, just to name one.
Well, I think one of the big differences between John Barry and many of his predecessors is that he likes federal workers. He has been one for a long time. He studied government management, I believe, at Syracuse and Maxwell School. But he likes federal workers. He's dealt with them. And when he worked for Congressman Steny Hoyer of Maryland, Mr. Hoyer was a powerhouse and represented a district chock full of federal workers. And when the Federal Employee Pay Comparability Act, FEPCA, was enacted under George H.W. Bush, a Republican president signed by a Democratic Congress, federal workers thought happy days are here again. They're going to get a stream of raises, 11 in total, that would bring them up to or close to what the government says was comparability with similar jobs in the private sector. But the first president to handle this law was Bill Clinton. He'd come in as governor of Arkansas, came to Washington, was horrified by the salaries, the federal salaries he saw here, and he proposed a zero pay raise. And that's when this coalition of Republicans and Democrats, most of them from the Washington area, but including people like Norman Dix from Washington State and a few other friends of Fed's. And when the president was a Democrat and was advocating a smaller pay raise for federal workers, Hoyer would get his coalition together, and John Berry was the point man for that. And they would go around and really work against their president on this one particular issue. When a Republican was president, Frank Wolf or Tom Davis, somebody like that, would take up the cudgel, if you will, and get these raises. And I learned early on, it took me about 2 years of this, but I talked to John Berry from time to time up on the Hill. And I finally figured out that when he disappeared, when he left the radar screen, that meant something big was happening. And invariably, he would be unavailable for weeks or sometimes a month or two. And at the end of that time, they would announce a much bigger and better pay raise for federal workers. And I don't think his role and that of both the Republicans and the Democrats in Congress were appreciated at the time.
And those days are probably gone forever.
I think they're gone forever, yeah. Well, Bill, we've got a question here. We mentioned something. This is from David, VA. He says, please ask why under the Berry administration that OPM can't get around to writing the regs for phased retirement. It's been over a year since a public law has been enacted that authorized a new benefit. You got any insight on that?
I don't have any specifics, but I suspect that, you know, given all the other priorities that we're dealing with in this nation in terms of the questions about the budget and the financial situation we're in, the debt ceiling, I just think it's taken somewhat of a back seat to these probably more pressing issues.
I'm going to, not necessarily disagree with you, Bill, but just offer another perspective. This is just one of any number of regulations that are backed up. SEA led the charge to get a law passed a year or so ago, Flags for the Fallen, which would provide a flag to the family of any civilian killed in the line of duty. And it's over a year. We don't have regulations there. We don't have regulations for SLST pay, and that's several years. So something else is going on there other than simply we're very busy.
Explain what that is.
Senior mm-hmm. level and STs, which are scientific and professional. They're SES equivalents. And several years ago, got some legislation passed to bring them into alignment with SES pay, and that would put their pay systems under the same certification processes. SES pay. Well, we're still waiting for those regulations.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when push comes to shove on some things like this, and I know there are gray areas, the Office of Management and Budget trumps the OMB, or OPM, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And so, obviously, the inescapable conclusion almost is, for some reason, OMB feels that these regulations shouldn't be issued.
Okay, so that is that. Got an email here from William Small in Scottsdale, Arizona, and he says, thanks for the article about John Berry. I think he's one of the best we've ever had at the helm of OPM, and my experience with the Fed's dates from the mid-1950s. I can also state from my personal experience that Mr. Berry has been attentive to matters affecting the masses, but always had his ear to the ground for matters affecting the individual, one in particular, me. We'll miss him if he leaves in the near future, but congratulate him on a job well done and best wishes as he moves on to other pursuits within the government or not. Probably a lot of people would say that. Do either of you have any idea where John Berry is going? We need to take a break here on Federal News Radio, but we'll be right back and with that question.
Legal mistakes can be costly. Whether it's a business contract or dispute, a family situation or property, Power of Attorney covers all that and more. This Saturday at 10 a.m., join the attorneys from Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman and learn the latest legal developments affecting businesses and individuals. Power of Attorney is sponsored by Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman, a full-service law firm taking pride in working together with our clients, fully invested in their success. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
MilitaryByOwner.com. When duty calls, they can help.
During my time in the military, our family has been transferred 6 times. That's 6 times we've had to sell or rent our home and find housing near our new duty station. Before our most recent move, my friend recommended we advertise our home on MilitaryByOwner.com. We posted the ad and quickly found a buyer. My wife and I agree, Military by Owner helped make our transition smoother.
Military by Owner. Find, sell, or rent housing near any U.S. military base. Homes advertised by homeowners and real estate agents.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
This is J.J. Green. The United States Navy is the largest in the world with a battle fleet tonnage greater than that of the next 13 largest navies combined. The Navy also is the world's largest carrier fleet, with 11 in service, 1 under construction, and 2 planned, and 1 in reserve. The service has 328,000 personnel on active duty, 102,000 in the Navy Reserve. If you have a story about the Navy, email me at jgreen@wtop.com.
We see the hiker. He appears injured.
Every day, the Army and National Guard take to the skies in their newest helicopter, the UH-72A Lakota from EADS North America. Whether for medical evacuation, search and rescue, or emergency response, the Lakota ensures our armed forces complete the mission.
Hiker is secure.
And every Lakota's been delivered on time and on budget.
ETA, 30 minutes.
EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
The 2013-14 season ticket deposit campaign is on now.
Obviously, it's one of the hottest tickets in town.
Full season ticket deposits are $250 per seat.
Puck fired. They score!
You don't want to miss the 2013-14 Caps team in action.
It's hard to beat the atmosphere here. It's rocking and rolling.
Do your part in building America's hockey capital. Call 202-266-CAPS or log on to WashingtonCaps.com for more information.
Start here at Optimos. We envision America having confidence in their government to provide quality services at the right price. We believe government contractors are part of the solution. In nearly 2 decades serving the federal government, Optimos has learned that smaller, smarter, faster, cheaper services and solutions can help make that vision a reality. Innovation should be incremental, configurable, quick, and affordable, and it should provide sustainable value to the government and the taxpayer. Smaller, smarter, faster, cheaper. It's how we think. It's what we do. Learn more at Optimos.com.
This week I've been looking at solar chargers for my iPhone. Last week I was out and about and my iPhone went dead as a doornail. And I thought to myself, you know, there's all this sunlight. Why couldn't I get a solar charger for this? And there are a number of solar chargers out there. Now, the charge time varies anywhere from 6 hours to 12 hours, depending on which one you get. But at least you can get something going.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Join the Coalition for Government Procurement on April 17th for their training conference, Continuing the Dialogue, at the Crystal Gateway Marriott in Arlington, Virginia. Hear how strategic acquisition can both improve the efficiency of government and provide an opportunity for businesses to offer innovative solutions. Any government and industry professional from across the procurement community should attend this event. Don't miss this opportunity to learn and network with your colleagues from government and industry. Register now at the Coalition for Government Procurement's website, thecgp.org.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and glad to have you with us. We're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. and hope you will listen in when you can and tell a friend. And if you can't, we're archived on our website, so you can actually listen to any of these shows, including those that are a couple of years old, just by going there, so you can listen at your leisure. Today we're talking about John Berry, the director of the Office of Personnel Management for the last 4 years, probably the most visible and, I would say, the most popular OPM director that I can recall, at any rate. And a lot of people think he's going to be sorely missed. My guests on sort of rating John Berry are Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association, and Bill Dugan, president of the National Federation of Federal Employees. And he took time out today and got up very early. He is in New Mexico at White Sands doing some union business. So, folks, thank you for being here. And I was going to ask you, Carol, the OPM, it's not exactly a household word, even in Washington. But with all the federal workers here, I think most of them know what OPM is. Probably most understand to some extent what it does. But I guess I'd ask you the question, since we're making the show about John Berry today, does it really matter who's director of an agency like OPM, or do these things sort of run on automatic pilot?
Oh, I think it definitely matters. And I'll take a very parochial example, if I may. To enter the SES, you have to have your qualifications reviewed by Qualifications Review Board. A lot of agencies really dislike this process intensely and argue that, well, it takes too long, et cetera, which it doesn't. Our view is that it's a very important safe stopgap, if you will, to prevent politicization of the Corps. So what I'm simply suggesting is that take any OPM director. I'm certain they've all had pressures placed on them to move cases through, perhaps that shouldn't be moved through, et cetera. And I suspect, without knowing precisely, that some are more inclined to be customer-friendly, if you will, mm-hmm. than others. So that's certainly one place where I think it makes a difference. How much spine do you have? How strongly are you willing to weigh in with the administration on behalf of federal employees? I mean, obviously, the OPM director is an administration appointee. So I think they walk a tough line. And I was just reminded when you asked that question, and for the life of me, I can't think of his last name. Jim?
King?
Thank you.
Okay.
I had this vision in my mind of his going out on the lawn at OPM and burning the federal personnel manual. And the really smart people in Washington kept a copy.
Right. Well, you know, another thing they did, that was, I guess, part of Vice President Gore's golden hammer.
Reinventing government.
And the one that intrigued me about that was they had that director standing next to his personnel folder, was it the 171?
Yeah, 172.
Yeah, something you filled out, an application for the government, and it was about 4 feet tall. And I thought, that doesn't jive with what I know about the form. And I looked at, I got one from OPM, and it's 4 pages.
Exactly.
And what they had done was add a lot of paper to it to make it look as if it was a bulky thing. But in fact, the Washington Post's job application was longer than the federal government's at that time. But they were kind of destroying the village to save it. They needed to make the government look bad so they could, quote, make improvements.
I think there really have been very clear differences between OPM directors. I think that, for example, Linda Springer, who I think was really good OPM director, mm-hmm. Probably more focused on management of the agency and on policy issues than John's been. But everybody brings their own strengths and interests to a job, which is not to say they're not fulfilling the obligations, but that they are different.
Yeah. Bill Dugan, does it matter that who's running OPM, or is it just a machine that goes on for 4 years from administration to administration?
Well, I think it absolutely matters. I agree a lot with Carol in terms of They bring a certain style, and it really matters whether they're more of a strategic thinker versus a tactical thinker. And I would put John in the former. I think he's very strategic. He tends to take a more broad view and look at sort of what's broken across federal government and focus on those areas. A couple examples. I think he's been a very good champion for telework across the federal government and has put a lot of energy into developing the telework program, which I think ultimately will end up saving the government a lot of money in terms of being able to save on building space while still continuing to get the mission of the agencies done.
Well, the one thing a lot of people think, you had to get rid of a generation of managers who wanted to be able to eyeball employees, and they just couldn't buy into the concept that somebody is working from home and actually working.
I think that's true, and we haven't got there 100% yet. We still have those kinds of problems across all agencies. It's a matter of trust. It's a matter of letting employees demonstrate that they can do the work without physically being present in the office.
Well, I know all the federal unions, I think, unanimously supported candidate Obama for the presidency, and then they unanimously supported his reelection. And they got some very good stuff, at least at first. The National Security Personnel System was rolled back. A variety of programs that were unpopular with unions and a lot of workers were rolled back. The year 2009 was arguably one of the best federal workers I've ever had. That's when Congress passed a number of things, including the phased retirement, I believe, that were a real boon to federal workers. They'd been in the pipeline, some of them, for years, but they all seemed to come together, and it looked as if there was going to be a new golden age for federal workers, but then along came the recession, and what happened?
Well, in my opinion, I think that the financial situation that the country faced put the administration in a very bad spot in terms of trying to weigh between dealing with the financial problems that we had as those translate into the budget and into funding the government. So there was some compromises made that unfortunately had very adverse impacts to federal employees, and the federal workforce found themselves becoming essentially the ATM for Congress as a pay-for trying to deal with some of these budget and deficit issues.
Well, when the president proposed the two-year pay freeze, it had been three under that commission he had recommended, but he proposed the two. So are the unions angry at the White House as well, or is it they're leaning on Congress?
Well, I think there's frustration with both. Certainly, you know, the administration has done some very positive things for the workforce, but here recently we're seeing signs that some of those positive impacts are becoming less and less. And as one example, there's talk that the budget that's going to be revealed later today has got some things in there that are certainly not worker-friendly in terms of the federal workforce with respect to retirement benefits and some other issues.
Carol?
Yeah, this is a place where I think that the administration has really not stood up, if you will, for the federal workforce, has not made the case of the importance of having the kind of workforce that you really need now more than ever to meet the kind of challenges we have, and where there could have been or could be certainly more leadership on this issue. And that's where I think that being director of OPM is somewhat of a thankless job from time to time, because John is in a position or has been the position of having to defend some of these decisions, and as well as, of course, make decisions about snow days. So it is a tough job, and you can't forget that he does work for the administration.
Well, I know you mentioned snow days. I wanted to bring up something about that, but we need a short break here. We'll be right back on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
Top companies and job seekers have tapped into the power of Washington's newest job site, PowerJobs.com. Isn't it time you join them? PowerJobs.com is the new career site made for Washington's top talent, featuring opportunities in the most influential industries that make up our region, including nonprofit, defense, government, finance, energy, healthcare, and technology. Opportunities from employers like K&L Gates, Virginia Hospital Center, and American Hospital Association. New on Power Jobs this week:
Federal Legislative Manager, National Association of Home Builders, Program Analyst, Pioneering Evolution, Quality Health IT Manager, American College of Emergency Physicians, and Senior Vice President, National Community Pharmacists Association. Find these jobs and other great opportunities at PowerJobs.com.
Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com.
Staff is down. Budgets are down. Mandates and executive orders are up. How are you addressing your critical IT security needs in this changing environment? When you don't have enough resources, automation is the answer, delivered by Four Points Technology and partners like RSA. Grow your existing RSA Secure ID platform with risk-based profiling and authentication, fast and effortless to deploy, and simplicity itself to administer. The new RSA Authentication Manager 8.0 now delivers intelligent, transparent, behind-the-scenes authentication to enhance every secure access scenario. Four Points Technology has been dedicated to providing IT products and professional services exclusively to the federal government for over a decade. To learn more about how Four Points Technology and RSA's custom solutions can solve your unique needs, visit fourpoints.com/RSA. That's the number 4points.com/RSA. Four Points Technology is a service-disabled veteran-owned small business and a proud sponsor of Operation Homefront.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team, led by Technical and Management Resources, Inc., is a GSA Alliance small business contract holder. Here's President and CEO, Linda Carr.
The Advanced Alliance Solutions team consists of 7 IT firms. Collectively, our core competencies cover all of the functional areas of the Alliance contract and supports agencies' enterprise IT requirements. For potential small business teaming opportunities, please contact us at advancedalliant.com.
To learn more, visit advancedalliant.com.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal. But federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
How are government agencies changing the way they do business? What is the U.S. Department of Defense doing to change the way it does business? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions with government leaders such as Gene Dodaro of GAO, Danny Werfel of OMB, Bob Hale and Beth McGrath of DOD, and a host of others for a special edition of The Business of Government Hour, Leaders Speak, a conversation on changing the way government does business.
Stopping blood flow from a wound can, of course, mean the difference between life and death. So a new sponge has been engineered to speed clotting. Even a neck wound that obviously can't take a tourniquet could be quickly sealed using the sponge, says Paula Hammond, a chemical engineer at MIT.
We can actually coat every pore of that sponge and therefore really load it with a large amount of thrombin.
The protein thrombin induces rapid blood clotting, and Hammond devised a way to spray it into the sponge in alternating thin layers with tannic acid, a natural substance found in teas that
interacts with the protein in a way that doesn't remove its activity and preserves it.
Hammond says the active ingredients remain stable in the sponge for at least a few months. To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bill Dugan, president of the National Federation of Federal Employees, who's calling us from New Mexico, where he's working out at White Sands with the union, and Carol Bonacero, who is president of the Senior Executives Association. We're talking about John Barry and sort of the last 4 years and the job of being director of OPM and what OPM is. Now, federal workers... And the rest of us have been through an awful lot this year. We had the fiscal cliff, then we had the continuing resolution, and we had the debt ceiling language, and there have been all these crises that led up to the one thing that we knew couldn't happen, and that was sequestration. Well, it happened. And now probably most federal workers are facing a certain number of furlough days. Bill, what are you hearing about the furlough from your people?
Well, obviously, it's a great cause of concern for our members. You know, most of our members make between $25,000 and $75,000 a year. When you're looking at taking 20% away from their paychecks through a one furlough day a year for the rest of the fiscal year. That's fairly significant in terms of reducing their buying power. And many of these folks who are already having trouble making ends meet on a paycheck and living paycheck to paycheck are going to find themselves in a position where they're going to have to make very tough decisions in terms of what they're going to have to forego or whether they're going to be able to make their house payment and put food on the table.
Well, both the administration and the Congress, the Republicans in Congress, have used this at different times as a political football. It's not going to happen. It is going to happen. If it happens, it's the end of the world. If it happens, it's not going to be too bad. It's depending on how well it played to their constituency. But I think with the exception of the U.S. courts, there have not been any furloughs yet. They are doing it there, and it's very obvious with the Public Defender Service, and they're even saying they can't try that alleged top aide to Osama bin Laden because they don't have a public defender for him. And I mean, it's gotten to that level. Do you think the furloughs are actually going to happen, or will a genie come along and make this all go away?
Well, personally, I think it is going to happen. I mean, I'm certainly praying for an 11th hour reprieve, but I just don't see it in the cards. I think, given the politicization and the partisanship that's going on in Congress and the struggle between Congress and the administration in terms of being able to come together and do business on any significant issue, is just too big of a barrier to deal with this. And it seems to me that at this point, at least, it looks like the Congress and the administration has turned their focus away from sequestration and is trying to deal with the 2014 budget issue now.
Yeah. Well, I just wondered because defense originally said 22 days and everybody's going to go in the tank. And then they later on said 14 days and maybe not everybody is going to go into it. Some other agencies have backdated their furloughs. They're not going to start until June or July, even though the fiscal year ends in September. And I just wondered if something was afoot here that we're not seeing. Carol, you?
Well, I think this is such a difficult, incredible time to be managing and trying to deal with budget, and planning this stuff out and figuring out which programs it has to impact or doesn't. I don't know. I mean, I hear from our members, and they are first very concerned about employees who work for them who are going to be hit, who don't have a cushion, don't have that ability to make it through, which is one of the reasons why I certainly wish that all these cabinet members and folks who are giving up part of their salaries and writing the check back to the Treasury would instead write it to FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund, where it would have some meaning to furloughed employees who are going to need emergency grants and loans. But I think it's fluid. We still have guidance coming out from OMB, I mean, just recently last week on the issue of awards and bonuses, et cetera. So I think, it still remains to be seen, and not all plans are yet all that clear.
Well, Bill, you were talking about the infighting between the administration and the Republicans in the House in particular, and the issue has been the Democrats want to raise taxes on the rich and the Republicans want entitlement cuts. I think what's going to come out of this budget that will be released just in a few minutes at 11 a.m., one of the things that's going to come out of it is the chained CPI. It's the sum of all fears for federal workers and unions and retiree groups, because this is the kind of thing they would change the yardstick they use to measure inflation, and they would use something called the chained CPI, which a lot of experts say is a preferred method because it's more accurate in that it takes into account that people's habits, their spending habits, change when prices go up. So if steak is astronomical, you go to hamburger. If hamburger gets bad, you go to Hamburger Helper, and so on and so on. They say that's a more accurate way to measure the cost of living. Critics say it's the opposite, that it will drive everything down, and it will cost federal retirees and people who get Social Security, I think it's 0.3% each year and every year in increases, and that compounding in reverse over time will have an adverse effect on people. But could this be maybe the administration's give, and then it's up to the Republicans to come up with something?
Well, I think the administration at this point is looking for, opportunities to work with the Republican House. I mean, obviously, I think they're looking to finally pass a budget, and they're hopeful that they can do that. It's been, 4 years since we've had a budget. So we've just had this continuing resolution process going on. So, I mean, I think they're looking for different olive branches that they can hold out. And unfortunately, I think the only thing that makes sense in terms of working our way out of this fiscal nightmare that we find ourselves in this country is we have to do two things. I think it's going to take a series of tax increases as well as spending cuts. We can't do just one or just the other. And I think that's very clear that we're not going to be able to just cut our way out of this fiscal mess. We're not going to be able to tax our way out of this fiscal mess. It's going to take both. But the other thing that nobody really seems to be talking a lot about, and the message has kind of dropped out, I think, in the media, is we've got, close to 30 million people in this country that are still unemployed or underemployed. And I think my feeling is if we could put people back to work, I think, a lot of this problem will start to be resolved over time, because as people go to work, they've got payroll taxes, and that's returned to the Treasury. People have money, and it circulates through local economies, and I think we can eventually, start to work our way out of this mess. But until that happens, until we get, unemployment under control and can find ways to put people back to work, I think we're going to continue to struggle in this country.
Well, there's a lot of talk about the fact that Congress is not approving its budgets, or the White House isn't turning in a budget, almost as if it's something new. But I think when Senator Inouye announced his retirement, one of the frustrations he said was that how long it had been since the House and the Senate had approved a budget. And I think somebody went back and looked and found there were 5 years in the last 29 that they have approved budgets, and four of those were the last 4 years of the Clinton administration. So it's not new. We rediscover it every year, but it's not new. Maybe this change CPI is a breakthrough. This is the kind of thing that Republicans have talked about it for years, but to have a Democratic administration propose it is a breakthrough.
It's an interesting question, though, that, do you start by offering up your bottom line? And as some people have suggested, the administration negotiating with itself, or do you start somewhere else on the theory that eventually you'll have to give and maybe get to this point? How this is going to play out and what's going to work best is an interesting question.
Yeah. Carol, you mentioned earlier about the importance of the financial people in the government, the budget types, and now more than ever. And by coincidence, Federal News Radio this week is having a series all 5 days about the money people, the people from Planet Money, and how suddenly these budget types and CFOs, who people in government have always known their importance, but people outside of government and people who are watching government are now seeing how important it is to juggle money, because agencies have been told to make cuts of from 5% to 8%, and for a lot of people on the outside, that doesn't seem to be an irrational thing, and they think if something as big as the government should be able to make a 5% or 8% cut. But I guess it's easier said than done.
Yeah, and what's interesting as you think about this too is let's not forget that we've been talking for years about the coming retirement tsunami. And I think that the floodgates have started to open. I mean, I've seen a lot more of our members retiring now. I think that people have gotten to a point where not only are they tired, because this is an exhausting way to run a government, but also with all the hits that federal employees are taking, people are finally saying, look, I love my job. I care about what I do. But maybe it's time to go and, find another line of work in my next life. I think if that happens, we're going to be, as this builds, we're going to be in bad shape because the government is not looking like an attractive employer right now.
All right. I'll ask you about the retirement tsunami when we come back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
The Guiding You Home Safely report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
Sequestration is hurting the aviation system. The FAA is closing airport control towers, imposing a hiring freeze, and closing its training academy. Equipment outages will become more common due to a fix-on-fail policy toward maintenance repairs. Furloughs starting April 21st will affect every air traffic controller and result in a 10% reduction in staffing. USA Today warns staff shortages at heavy-volume airports could mean nationwide delays similar to severe weather.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. If you fly, you don't want to hear about reduced air traffic control services and longer delays, and nobody wants our economy to suffer. But that's what we're facing unless Congress acts now to stop the slashing of $500 million from the aviation operations budget. This is no way to run the world's most efficient and complex airspace system, and no way to keep our economy growing. Help urge Congress to stop the cuts today. Visit us at NACA.org, NATCA.org.
Here's David Bowen, CIO for the Military Health System, on the Federal Executive Forum on Health IT and Government, sponsored by McAfee.
I get very interested in the challenge of change and change management. I have a saying that, you know, in our business, the silicon-based units are easy to manage. It's the carbon-based units that are difficult. And certainly the culture of change and change management, getting our physicians to do things different ways.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
The rapid rise in cybersecurity threats and compliance requirements make protecting citizens' confidential information increasingly challenging. McAfee is the standard throughout federal, military, intelligence, and civilian enterprises worldwide. McAfee's capabilities are essential to assuring federal networks remain resilient against the latest cyber threats. To learn more about how McAfee can help your organization combat cybersecurity threats, call 888-VIRUS-NO or go to McAfee.com/government.
The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
The U.S. Army has approved a second recertification of Raytheon's Patriot missiles, extending the operational life of the missiles from 30 to 45 years. Patriot's customers around the world can now recertify and upgrade their Raytheon Patriot missiles at a fraction of the cost of purchasing new missiles. The Letterkenny Army Depot in Pennsylvania and Raytheon will perform the recertification work. Raytheon will do all upgrades at its Andover, Massachusetts facility.
5 million hours of experience, 22 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon Standard Missile 3 protects. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words. Well, picture your family and your home safe and secure with Ackerman Security Systems. Picture yourself controlling your system remotely from your mobile phone anytime, anywhere. Picture yourself watching video clips of happenings at home before your kids get home from school. Picture everything you can do with the money saved by choosing Ackerman Security.
Whether you need a basic system at $18.95 a month or the latest technology with Total Connect services, trust Ackerman. Security is all they do. With the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5 Diamond Certified Monitoring Center. It's safety, convenience, and peace of mind for you and your family. Call Ackerman today and get 3 months of basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070. That's 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. Sequestration is here, and federal leaders are facing a perfect storm of public scrutiny, increased pressure to perform, and reduced budgets. At Excellence in Government on May 13th and 14th, they will convene federal leaders, managers, and government performance stakeholders at this free educational event to learn the key tactics needed to succeed in today's environment. Join federal colleagues May 13th and 14th in Washington, D.C. to get the ideas you need now to drive high-performance government. Learn more at excellenceingov.com.
This is Mark Amtower. I've been advising contractors for almost 30 years, and when they need agency contacts, I always recommend Carroll's GovSearch. With over 350,000 contact listings and over 1,000 government organization charts, they help you find the people you need to reach in all levels of government. Give them a try. Get a free organization chart and a sample listing from their database. Contact Gordon Peel at 703-757-8228. Carroll Publishing, bringing government to you like no other.
Hey, welcome back to Your Turn, Mike Causey. I'm talking with Bill Dugan. He is president of the National Federation of Federal Employees. Carol Bonacero, who is president of the Senior Executives Association. We're sort of a look back at 4 years of John Berry, whose term is expiring this month, very soon, and wonder what will happen to him. He's been a fixture in the federal scene, the civil service scene, for 20, 25, 30 years for his time on the Capitol Hill. He worked at the Interior Department. He was director of the National Zoo, best job in government, according to many people. And then he steps into the Office of Personnel Management, where they're the people that have to make the snow days call. And, you know, it's going to be 80 out there today, so it's hard for us to imagine. But it wasn't that long ago, weeks ago, that OPM was having to make these calls. And you were talking before, we were talking during the break about how OPM has changed over the years.
Sure. If you think back, and you and I have been around long enough to think this far back, OPM had a primary role as oversight of the civil service and dealing with the regulations and policies and making certain that things were done according to Hoyle. And if you think about how OPM has morphed over the years, mm-hmm. really, it's very different today, much more oriented to whatever it's, whether it's labor management relations or telework or improving the performance management system. As an old OMB friend of mine used to say, the emphasis is on a different syllable today. I think a very different place. And, you know, it's not unusual sometimes for us to look to OPM to be undertaking more of what used to be done in the past, more of that oversight, getting out these regulations, et cetera, and being frustrated with them because they're not sufficiently being all things to all people.
Yeah, so they're different but not necessarily better, huh?
Well, I'm not sure if I want to go there.
Yeah, okay. Well, Bill, the retirements are up, as Carol was saying. I think 20,000 people retired last month. They had predicted 5,000. This has been the story now for months, and the year 2012, I think, was a near record number of people retiring. This appears to be the tsunami that was first. We were warned about it in 1999, so it's taken a while to get here. But with the aging process and now 3 years of federal pay, are people voting with their feet? Or are they tired, or are they just getting older?
I think it's a combination of both. I mean, certainly, I think what happened was we've had people that have been sitting on the fence with respect to trying to make a decision about whether they wanted to retire or not for a number of years. I think what's pushing folks over off the fence now and beginning the tsunami of retirements in the federal government, there's really a couple of things. One is I think when we had the Wall Street crash, the financial disaster that we had several years ago in this country, a lot of federal employees really took a beating on their thrift savings plan accounts that they had invested in the stock market. And I think people made a conscious decision, many of those people made a conscious decision to continue to work to try to recoup some of those losses that they took when Wall Street collapsed. And so I think that's one issue that has allowed people to continue to work when otherwise they may have chosen to retire. I think the other thing that's going on now, certainly, as we've been talking about, you know, the war on federal employees that has been ongoing for the last several years with respect to the attacks on pay and retirement and other benefits. I think that's weighing heavily in the minds of these folks that have been sitting on the fence. And I think people are just tired of waking up every morning wondering, you know, what the next hit's going to be in terms of, an adverse impact on them. And in particular, folks that are, you know, that are looking at retirement, I think obviously want to retire while the high three is being used to calculate their annuity, as opposed to some things that we've seen in Congress being offered up in terms of bills where they would go from a high three to a high five, which would have an adverse impact on your monthly retirement check.
It's funny, I've had so many people contact me about that. It's been a threat for years now, and it's been around, and they say they would retire if it happens. But what other leaders were worrying about is that this change CPI would come up, and then that would be the one. That's the big money item, but the high three is something people can grasp and get their hands on. Carol, do you think, I mean, you represent the senior executive service, the people at the top pay level in government. A lot of them have particular skills that they could go into the private sector tomorrow, even in the bad economy, and do as well or better.
Indeed, and we know quite a number of them who have, and I think that's where at some point they have to sit back and say, you know, at what point am I going to do this? My family, you know, needs are such that it makes sense for me at some point to peel off. You know, before we run out of time, I just want to go back to John Barry, if I may, for a moment, because I think that when I think about John, you know, he's a straight shooter. He's been very accessible. I think he really cares about the workforce. He's been an effective spokesperson. But he's been in what can really be a thankless job. But I think the one thing that's always fascinated me is how smart the administration was to put him there, because John's so likable, he very often has been able to deflect the heat.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and they couldn't, I guess nobody anticipated the financial crash, but when that happened, that sort of jump-started what Bill Dugan was talking about, this press political think tank campaign about overpaid feds, overpaid and underworked feds.
And it's so frustrating, especially, frankly, to us, because we do have very clear data. If you do match very specific jobs in the senior executive service to their counterparts in private industry, and they lag behind substantially. And that's even without taking into account stock options.
Right. So we're about to run out of time here. I see our producer, Lauren Larson, giving me a steely glance. 1 minute, she says. Bill, do you have any last words?
Well, yeah, I would like to echo what Carol said about John. You know, I think he has been a straight shooter. He has been he has done all that he could do in terms of being a champion for federal employees. He's going those are going to be hard shoes to fill. While certainly labor has not always agreed with some of his decisions, he has been willing to sit down and talk with us, to listen to us, to take our input, and the open door policy at OPM has been a godsend for us. We have worked closely with John, and we're going to miss him.
Very good. All right, last word, and remember, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., so join us next week if you want to hear this show again or pass it on to a friend. We're archived on our homepage. Have a good week and stay safe.
Get the latest TSP numbers and thrift savings plan news every day on federalnewsradio.com's TSP page. Go to federalnewsradio.com, search TSP.
WFED Washington, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
NBC News Radio, I'm Dirk Van, U.S. Intelligence Keeper.